Molesworth Muster Trail.
At the top of the South Island, New Zealand.
Sound sounds from Barbara Sound to Milford Sound.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, after another dominant victory, we're asking if Pogacar and Vanderpool really are on a different planet.
Plus, the most ridiculous decision the UCI has ever made, a new Shimano group set, and a banger of a nugget for the end of the show. So make sure you stick around. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that airbags in pro cycling are on their way.
This is cycling legend Johan Museo on Belgian news channel VRT, demonstrating the airbag in action and then showing how much more comfortable it is to crash on grass.
So good, that video. So I will tell you, I watched that about 10 times this morning and I laughed an equal amount every time I watched it. And I love it. It does feel like it could, though, be a genuinely positive thing for pro cyclists in the long run if they get it right, but that was hilarious, especially because it's Johan Museo, the lion of Flanders.
Absolutely.
Roaring.
Yeah, a man who takes himself quite seriously. And now we also learnt that there was a good reason why Matthew Brennan didn't drink his Quermont beer on the podium after winning Kerner Brussels Kerner. And that is that he's a celiac, meaning that he can't eat or drink anything with gluten in, like most beers. And as a celiac myself, Dan, I can sympathise, although it has to be said, I always drank champagne on podiums.
Did you?
Which is, of course, gluten-free.
Okay. You were a podium boy at some point, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. How many times did you actually drink champagne on the podium, Si?
I think more than once.
Actually?
Yeah, I think so.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Well, either way, at least you have one thing in common with the mega talent that is Matt Brennan.
What?
Good for
yeah.
you, Si. Finally, we learned that Paul Sexas is doing Pogacar-type things in more ways than one. So on Saturday at the Phone Ardèche Classic in France, the 19-year-old rode away from the entire peloton, finally then dropping Matteo Jorgensen with 41 kilometres to go.
Whilst taking a drink from his water bottle. Yeah. But on top of that, the climb where he dropped everyone was the same climb where Pogacar dropped his rivals, including Sexas, at last year's European Championships.
And then to make the comparison even more eerie, his time on the climb on Saturday was exactly the same as Pogacar's time on that same climb last year, to the second.
If we're getting nerdy, Sexas went quicker in the first half of the climb, whereas Pogacar went quicker in the second half. Now, some online estimates say that he averaged over 7 watts per kilo for 16 minutes on that climb. The two of them, Pogacar and Sexas, are due to meet in competition on Saturday for the first time this year at Strada Bianca. And it is a mouth-watering prospect to see how they stack up now that Sexas is 1 year older, wiser and stronger.
Albeit still a teenager.
Yes. So,
which is ridiculous, really. Now, his performances are another example of how we're currently in an era of what some fans would describe as extraterrestrial. Riders are clearly far superior to most of their rivals, despite the general standard also being higher than it's ever been.
It's a bit of a head-scratcher, isn't it? There were a few examples of this just at the weekend. So as we said, Mathieu van der Poel won Omloop Het Nieuwsblad at his first time of trying, and he appeared to do so, frankly, with relative ease.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't that easy, but it really looked it.
It looked it, didn't it? Demi Vollering was almost as dominant in the women's. Nivi Domi did stick with her, but was clearly suffering just to keep up. Whilst on Sunday in Kuurne, as we mentioned before, Visma's young sensation Matt Brennan became the youngest ever winner of the race, and he looked like he was in a class of his own as he sprinted to victory there.
Yeah, and then when you add in the likes of Evenepoel, and then Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, Pogacar and Vingegaard, who are yet to even race this year.
Yeah.
And it feels as though, more than ever, the biggest talents are sweeping up more and more of the biggest races.
Yeah, you only need to look at the results of the major men's one-day races over the past few years to see that. So since the start of 2023, Van der Poel, Pogacar and Evenepoel have won every monument, every world championship and every Olympics road race, except for one. Jasper Philipsen have managed to get Milano Sanremo in 2024.
That is a bonkers statistic, isn't it? So three riders have won 18 of the last 19 biggest one-day races in the world. And they've also occupied 23 out of the 45 possible podium spots in the last 15 monuments. Yeah. So that is an unprecedented level of domination.
It is.
And consistency.
Yeah, the closest comparison that we could find is from the early 70s, where Eddie Merckx and Roger de Vlaeminck won 10 monuments out of 15 between 1971 and 1973. However, that stat is skewed slightly because of Merckx's dominance, basically. So he won 8 out of those 10.
I mean, that is really ridiculous, isn't it? How many times has Pogačar won in the last 3 years?
Seven. You've got seven
monuments.
Ten in total, seven in the last 3 years. Yeah.
So not that far off, then.
Not too far off, no. And then it's a similar story, of course, at the Tour de France in recent years. So Pogačar and Vingegaard have filled the top two places of the podium for the last 5 editions consecutively. We've never seen anything like that level of consistency in terms of a rivalry before. I guess the closest we have results that stand, at least, is from Zoetemelk and Hinault. They finished second and first, respectively, at 3 Tours de France in 78, 79 and 82.
I mean, that's not even a rivalry in comparison, is it? And when you say about results that still stand, if you include Lance and Jan Ulrich, which technically you can't, but some of you will, they obviously only had 1-2 on 3 occasions as well. Even though that seems like a rivalry for the ages as well. Anyway, back to the original question. How is it possible that a select few riders are so superior to everyone else?
Well, you know what some people would say, Si, because we read it quite a lot. It's obvious, isn't it? Why do you think they're so much better than everybody else?
But are they not the same people who say, they're all on it, thus rendering the first part of their argument completely obsolete?
Quite possibly. If you're wondering actually what this argument is that we're talking about, it's of course doping. And I do always understand that scepticism. In fact, I would say it's more than justifiable because cycling has a long history of cheating at the pro level. And I think there are a lot of cycling fans who've been stung one too many times over the years to then believe in the performances that they're witnessing now.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'd say it's important that we do remain sceptical and ask questions of what we're witnessing.
Exactly, yes.
Across any sport, in fact, because cycling is definitely not the worst.
No.
Not that we're getting into this debate. But anyway, for me, the rise of Paul Sexas, who we were talking about earlier, is one of the reasons to believe in it. I mean, I have zero proof that he's clean, but I kind of have a hunch that as a 19-year-old, he's not cheating. Like, it almost like he can't be cheating. He's clearly extremely talented. He's known to be a dedicated professional, hardworking. And that combination is allowing him to be with the world's best at a young age.
Yeah, it'd be a big leap to suddenly join the pro person. Right, I'm going to cheat straight away, wouldn't it? 19 years of age or 18 last year. Whether or not he's the next Pogačar and or the rider who topples him from his throne is a different question, of course. But as you said before, it's certainly going to make Saturday's Strada Bianca even more compelling viewing. Let's just hope they both steer clear of bad luck on Saturday and we get to see them go properly head-to-head on the climbs.
Yeah, now another rider competing this Saturday who could be among the extraterrestrials is Pogačar's teammate, Isaac Del Toro. Now, the Mexican rider recently rode up a climb called Jebel Hafit in the UAE Tour significantly quicker than Pogačar has ever done it. Now, does that mean he is better than Pogačar? Absolutely not. A lot of riders went quicker than Pogačar did
on that day.
Yeah. It just goes to prove, though, how much difference conditions can make, even to climbing times, which are obviously far less affected than flatter roads.
It does raise the question, though, how many extraterrestrials you can have before it becomes less extra and more terrestrial, if you get my gist. And I do wonder if modern racing, and by that I mean with the latest kit and nutrition advances, is allowing these kind of showboating performances more than previous eras did.
Yeah, I wonder that too, actually. I mean, it's hard to prove, but it is a notable change, isn't it, over what we've seen, well, in 5 years prior to this and for the kind of decades preceding it. I mean, how many races did Alejandro Valverde win solo?
Oh, crikey.
Not many at all. And he won a lot of races, right? But I think that that shouldn't then cloud the few riders who are really, really head and shoulders above. So discounting Del Toro, Sexas, it's basically, on the men's side of things, Pogačar and Van der Poel, isn't it? And then on the women's side, Marianne Vos, I think, whose powers are waning.
Yeah, historically it's been her, yeah.
That's it. They, to my mind, are in that rarefied atmosphere of a rider that transcends the sport.
Kind of like an Usain Bolt of cycling, making the fastest runners in the world look like schoolboys at his peak.
Or Simone Biles, taking gymnastics to another planet.
Or Michael Phelps.
Yeah, or Serena Williams.
Oh, crikey, I haven't got any more.
I could keep going, mate. Who's the pole vaulter?
I don't know his name.
Del Plante, Mondo.
Sergey Bubka. It's the pole vaulter from my era. Did the same thing.
Isim Baeva, two pole vaulters. Taking things to another level.
And we were just rattling them offside.
Yeah, anyway, in all sports.
Bang, bang, bang.
In all sports, there are examples of people who are capable of making the best of the rest, who are still the best in the world, look completely ordinary. And I think it's absolutely fascinating as to why it happens.
And the conclusion, I guess, we've got then really is we don't know why.
No.
Which is a great conclusion for a lead story, isn't it? But well, it will always be a combination of factors, won't it, I guess?
It will, yeah. So, for example, did you know that Michael Phelps didn't just have his infamous size 14 feet and a wingspan to trouble a condor?
Well, so yeah.
But he also produces half the lactate of his rivals, apparently, and then he has hypermobile ankles and shoulders that effectively make his feet and his limbs act more like flippers.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's handy, the swimmer, isn't it?
Handy. But they're pretty big as well.
That's footy. People often wonder what natural attributes I have, Si.
Yeah. And I think when they conclude none, kind of all begins to make sense, doesn't
it? True. That's my conclusion and my point. Anyway, in conclusion, generally, whilst we are in an unprecedented time when it comes to dominance of the biggest one-day races amongst a handful of riders, we're also in an incredibly exciting era, I would argue personally. That domination at this point has lasted for 4 years at least, the Pogačar-Vingegaard domination of the Tour de France for 5 years, but that means we're close to the end of it, Si. Van der Poel is in his 30s.
Ancient.
Yeah, ancient, precisely. Pogačar and Vingegaard are in their late 20s. In fact, Vingegaard will turn 30 later on this year.
Pretty much.
And there are teenagers coming up through the ranks who are probably hungrier and definitely have more room for improvement. So the next few years, mark my words, are going to be very exciting indeed.
Or are they? Maybe you lot disagree. If so, you can, of course, let us know in the comment section below. Are we about to see a toppling of the world's best riders? And are the next generation going to be quite as dominant? Has racing changed to allow it? We will be interested to read your thoughts.
Also, let us know your thoughts on the domination of that handful of riders. Do you think it's suspicious, or is it actually just something that we see in every generation of cyclists and other athletes?
And we've just got really short memories.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't believe you went through this entire story and you haven't mentioned Paul Wout van Aert once.
I know. Well, he's just fallen behind, really, from a stats point of view, hasn't he? He is one of the best riders of his generation. I think we'd all agree that. But he's only won one monument. And for obvious reasons, he's never going to win a Grand Tour overall.
Like, poor Wout. He actually will have returned to racing by the time you guys watch this. Illness took him out of Omloop on Saturday. But he should have raced in Les Amiens today. I do really hope he wins another monument this spring.
Yeah, but 2020. You know, his first monument win came before Van der Poel's. And now they're on 8-1, I think it is.
Whoa.
It would have come before Pogačar, so that's now 10-1. But yeah, I'd love to see it too. Just don't think I will.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with a brand new group set from Shimano. It's their new Tiagra.
Which is Shimano's fourth-tier group set, sitting below 105 and above the new Qs. First things first, we do not know the price,
nope.
Which is a major stumbling block, but Shimano have not announced that just yet. And they've stipulated that varies from location to location anyway in terms of that price.
Yeah, however, what they have said is that it delivers modernised road performance at an attainable price.
So fingers crossed then,
yeah.
I guess. The headline stats are that it is 2x11, so not a 1x option, and it's 200 grams lighter than the previous generation, which is a decent amount, I would say.
It is, yeah. It's got an 11:36 cassette, so wide ratios, but then standard chainring options on crank sets, which I like.
I think people are going to have questions, Si, so to answer that question, 165mm is the shortest option.
Yeah, now the group set has got, bingo, loads of trickle-down tech, including the very neat toggle front derailleur design. And then they also say it's got the same lever ergonomics on the shifters, on the lever hoods, as 105 as well.
It's got hydraulic disc brakes, of course, as well.
Yeah, and most importantly of all, it looks good. So thumbs up from us.
Now, some good news for cyclists in Mallorca, which will include a lot of people who are watching this, no doubt. So first up, local authorities have extended the car-free period on the Cap de Formentor, which is that dead-end road in the northern part of the island. That's now going to be closed to traffic between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. from mid-May, as opposed to June, as was the case previously.
They should have more, longer, more months, I think, but still, It's good news. Sticking with Mallorca, the island's most popular climb, or certainly most famous climb, Sacalobra, saw its Strava QOM beaten last week by Stephanie Meader. So her time of 28.47 took 22 seconds off Eiley Gardner's time, which was set in late 2022.
Impressive, that, isn't it? So Meader is someone who took the sport up relatively late in life, but that clearly is not hampering her at this point. That's one of the most prestigious Strava segments in the entire world.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, how you can get riders like her, like Andrew Feather on the men's side of things, that can be some of the best non-pro climbers out there, be a little bit older and with full-time jobs.
Yeah. Well, that should give you some hope, Si, that one day you might be able to make it, because you work full-time.
I do, pretty much, yeah. It's why I've been training so hard recently. I've managed to average 7 hours per week recently.
That is actually quite a lot.
Yeah.
Watch out, Alex Payton. He's really going to get smashed this weekend.
He's going to get smashed this weekend.
Right, moving on then, or kind of moving on, because we mentioned the times in Mallorca that roads are going to be car-free. Something we touched on in recent weeks, though, is the cycling situation over in New York. Loads of which is positive, with more people riding on more dedicated infrastructure, which is effectively revolutionising the city.
But one sticking point, Central Park. Long a haven for recreational cycling, with, from what we gather, a great race scene and loads of clubs using it for riding and for training, but a speed limit of 15 miles an hour is being put in place, which effectively would put an end to much recreational riding.
The Gothamist is reporting that the new mayor, Zoran Mandani, who many hoped would help the cycling revolution in the city, is in favour of keeping the speed restrictions that had been proposed by his predecessor.
Yeah, now we had a comment under last week's show from Crippister, who said that the New York Cycle Club has just won a restraining order against the reduced speed limits on the grounds that the lower speed limit would jeopardise cyclist safety. Sounds a bit weird, but that's because it would be forcing them outside of the park to ride.
Now, I don't think that anyone disagrees with the idea of a speed restriction making life safer for many park users, including other cyclists. So a compromise solution, which Crippister suggests, as I say, which we've seen mooted elsewhere too, is to have a speed limit in place after 8 a.m.
Yeah, meaning that any fast riding could be done early in the morning when there are fewer people in the park, certainly fewer kids or elderly people. And to be fair, like, that's kind of what most people who are training would do anyway, because you can't really train when a park's full of people anyway, right?
Well, exactly, yeah. And if not, that is a real hammer blow for the New York cycling scene right there, isn't it?
Yeah, ban aero stuff. That would be the solution. Basically, New York's got the same issue as the UCI, just trying to slow people down.
Mm. Well, speaking of that, Si, at the top of the show, we said that the UCI has just made the most ridiculous decision of all time.
Yes.
This is amazing, isn't it? We read this on the new website, velorecycling.com.
Yes.
Velora?
Velora Cycling? I don't know. I don't know what Velora is.
No, I don't.
Anyway, a UCI Continental rider, Filippo Dauto, do you think that's how you say it?
I'm not going to try and correct you.
Two butchery pronunciations in two sentences. That's a record for us. Anyway, Filippo was stripped of his win.
You got that right. Thanks. Nailed Filippo.
Yeah, after a mid-race crash, supposedly bent his levers into a position that meant he was disqualified for having an illegal bike when the commissaires checked on the finish line.
If this is true, Si, this is utterly bonkers, isn't it? But to give you context, the UCI has banned brake leaves from being turned in too far to prevent riders having too much of an aero position and for reasons of safety, which is there as well. Yeah. What's particularly dumb in this case is that Dauto's bike...
Sorry, who?
Dauto's bike...
Nice.
...was checked before the start of the race, and it was fine then. And apparently, the commissaires didn't listen to the excuse that the crash had bent them into an illegal position midway through the race.
Yeah. Now, as Dan said, if this is true, because we don't know the ins and the outs here, and given that it wasn't a pro race at the highest level, we probably never will, because the level of media scrutiny and whatever is lower. But still, if a rider's bike is checked pre-race, and then they solo for 60 kilometres to win, as Dauto to then get DQ'd after for illegal brake lever angles. Mm. I mean, of all the trivial sounding things.
I mean, that's a very trigger happy comment there, right?
Yeah.
There, isn't it?
It'd be like if he sort of like after he fell off, he pulled his socks up. And then they were like, whoa, 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 sorry, buddy, your socks are too long. Mm. So, anyway, Yeah. Well, back to something a little bit more positive now. And this is really positive. There is some great news from the World Bicycle Relief. So many of you will know it's a charity that distributes bicycles in order to give new opportunities for people and communities in countries where distance and independence presents real problems, right?
So World Bicycle Relief have just celebrated giving away their 1 millionth bike. Which is incredible.
It is, absolutely, bikes. Yeah. So the bikes they give out are called Buffalo bikes. I think they are pretty much the hardest working, most reliable bikes on the planet. And they have an incredible array of success stories, helping people in every way from allowing them to stay in education because they can get to school, developing businesses, allow people to get to new markets and so forth, and then basic stuff like just increasing access to healthcare.
Yeah, exactly. It's a charity actually that's been always close to our hearts, and to celebrate this milestone, there's a funding match for any donations given in the next few days, and that's been matched by the travel company Backroads.
Yeah, that's cool, that, isn't it? You shaved your head once for World Bicycle Relief, didn't you?
I did, yeah, and I went out to visit places in Zambia.
You did,
where they
yeah.
were giving the bikes out as well, which is an experience. It was nice to see.
Yeah, right. We're going to finish Cycling Shorts with news of Cycling Shorts, but used ones.
Yes, as I said last week, how he's all for second-hand cycling kit, except for shorts, given they're designed to be used without underpants and undercrackers.
That's right. Too much rubbing and too much sweating for my taste. Although, I appreciate we all have different tastes.
You're not supposed to taste them, eh?
No. I mean, I didn't mean that kind of thing. Anyway,
you did.
We had loads of comments under last week's show echoing our thoughts about awesome second-hand bikes and equipment. Yep. But I thought this one from Budget Try was worth reading out. They said, I have no problem buying bibs on the second-hand market. Here in the US, we have Lysol laundry sanitizer. Now, fortunately, the spelling of Lysol is not like lice, because that would be really creepy, wouldn't it? But apparently, I Googled it, it kills 99.9% of odor-causing bacteria that detergents leave behind. And it works down in both standard and HE machines.
What's an HE machine?
No idea. Yeah. Anyway, Google also told me that it eliminates bacteria and stubborn, musty odours.
It's not quite 100% though, Sige.
No.
Is 99.9% enough for you, would you say? To lick them, taste them, whatever you said you were doing?
No, it's really not.
No? Okay. Interesting stuff. Right, just before we move on to the next part of the show, we've got some promoting to do. We've got some brand new print to celebrate the Spring Classics over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
Can I just say I'm struggling to change gear that fast? My mind is still stuck on...
Well, you really overthink the used shorts, don't you? You really can't get them off your mind.
Well, it's the licking. Anyway.
You brought it up, that taste. Anyway, we've got a load of prints available in two sizes, this being A4, but also available in A3, which I think we've got somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I've got that one. Because I'm taking that one home.
Yes, there should be a QR code on the screen now, which will take you through to the part of the Global Cycling Network shop where you can purchase these. They're available in these two sizes. They come framed, just like you see here. And as a reminder, any purchase that you make on our shop really helps us to make the free-to-view content that we make here at GCN. So always very much appreciated. And I hope you'll agree, they look pretty sweet.
Super cool. This one, La Primavera, celebrating the best bike race in the world.
According to Si.
Every year, hands down.
Was last year. I'll give you that last year. It was last year.
Every year. Milan San Remo. There we go. But no, those are super cool. Yeah, head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. Get your hands on some of those.
Next up, it's time for Hack Forward / Bodge of the Week. And before we get on to this week's slightly embarrassing admission from last week's show, that was pointed out to us, amongst others, by Scott's Biker 79. The Tektro brakes in Hack Forward / Bodge don't need a pad spacer because they're cable operated, so they just retract on their own regardless. It's only an issue hydraulic brakes that self-adjust to the level of pad wear. In the latter, it's essential. In the former, completely superfluous. It's a good point, well made, isn't it, really?
Showing our ignorance, so for that, we apologise. But also, very good news for the person who was concerned about keeping their pad pistons in place. So, kind of a win, that one. So no hack or bodge needed. Right then, starting us off this week, we have Schniggles. Schniggles. Third hand for handlebar tape installation. So Schniggles said, I assume many people can relate to the situation of wrapping new handlebar tape and having to watch a GCN video in parallel to get the Italian 8 Correct, including pausing the strong back. So using a simple spring clamp from the hardware store, I was easily able to keep my hands free for a moment to look up the instructions mid-rap. Simple yet effective. Do you know what, actually? That is quite a useful tool to have knocking around a workshop, isn't it? So for podcast listeners, it's basically like little plastic grips that are sprung loaded so that you can gently affix them to anything, and it stops it, in this case, unravelling bar tape. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
What a genius hack.
I'm going hack as well.
Absolutely.
I wonder if Schniggles is watching the handlebar wrapping video that I did many years ago, where I still don't look any older now. Right, this one comes in from Al, presuming that's not AI.
If they are, by the way, that would explain why they're consistently struggling.
Yeah, just getting really confused.
I'm just going to have to watch that bit again. Newer videos are available.
Al says, SRAM front mech lost power. Whilst at the top of a climb in Denya last week, my SRAM rival front mech lost power and I was unable to change to the big ring for the descent.
Ah.
Despite changing to fellow rider's known good battery or pressing the on-body button, I couldn't shift or get green lights. A quick chat with one bike shop back at base suggested maybe the retractable pins on the battery housing was stuck, and yet closer inspection showed it was, but lost its spring to stay out even when pulled out with pliers. Replacement rival body was €160, but none were in stock. So what they did was wedged a piece or ball of foil between what was showing of the pin and the battery plate, and it worked. Next day with a 160k ride with no dramas and a further 350k of Denya's finest climbs over the rest of the week. Winner.
Well, it's not the first time we've had that.
No, we haven't.
On Hacklebodge, which is weird because I've never heard of this problem ever before in a decade, I think, of SRAM wireless. But what a great get yourself home hack.
Well, it's just really worth knowing for a lot of people. Just, I mean, you said you haven't heard of it much, but if it does happen to you, keep that in mind.
100%. Yeah, totally. I probably want to contact SRAM about as well, I guess, actually. Mm. So there you go.
Or just buy some foil.
Well, yeah, definitely I'd buy foil over a €200 derailleur. But anyway, yeah, that's obviously a hack, isn't it?
It's a hack.
It's a hack. Neil Ferguson sent this one in. Winter bike washing. If you've ever tried washing your bike in the middle of winter in upstate New York, you know it's not exactly convenient. Dragging out a hose isn't an option because the hose is stored inside and the water line is shut off so nothing freezes. Washing it inside with a bucket makes a mess of the floor, and I've never liked the idea of bringing my bike into the shower. No, neither me. The best solution I found is a hand pump sprayer filled with warm, soapy water. Spray it down, scrub as needed, then follow up with clean water to rinse. There you go.
Mm.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
You've not even seen it yet, have you?
Well, I can sort of picture it.
Okay.
That is what I had in mind.
Yeah, it's something you probably used a fair bit in cyclocross, is it?
Well, for cross, those aren't really strong enough. That's kind of like a sort of a gentle tinkle, isn't it, as opposed to like the jet wash that you need for proper cross conditions. But no, for a road bike, or even a gravel bike, to be fair, that's wicked. So yeah, great hack that. And a great hack as well for anyone who's living in a flat or an apartment, of which
hack
there are many.
Hack for both of us again then. Emily loves curry. Water holder.
I love curry.
The guttering on the side of our garage fell down as the piece of wood it was attached to had rotted over time and had finally given way. Having no actual DIY supplies but plenty of bike items, we fixed the guttering by securing it with a water bottle holder and some trusty zip ties which are threaded through some handily placed pre-made holes that were already in the walls. A few pieces of wood wedged in to achieve the desired level, and hey presto!
I absolutely love this. This is what zip ties were invented for, and bottle cages too. The most like bike-obsessed hack I've ever seen in my life. Fixing your guttering with a water bottle cage and wood. Just ingenious, Dan.
It's going to be a bodge though, surely.
This is like the housing equivalent of having a car that's worth a fraction of the value of the bike that you're carrying in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love it. I'm totally here for that.
Okay, well...
Emily,
I'm actually going to say bodge, but I mean, I'm... Well, no, I'll go hack, all right.
I'm hoping that is still there.
When you sell the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
As featured on GCN, they could have in the particulars. Yeah. There you go. That's cool. Yeah, brilliant. Right, we've got one more, I think, haven't we? This is from Ben. Emergency bar tape procedure. A friend of mine ordered new bar tape and had thrown her old one out before the new one arrived.
Oh.
Big mistake, Ben says, and yes. It is a big mistake. We got surprised by great weather that weekend, and so a combination of way too short football grip band and medical tape patched the patient up, at least for enjoying a few hours of surprise sunshine. To be fair, it looks pretty good there, doesn't it?
It says foosball. Like... Do you reckon that's a misspelling? So oh. You don't use the grip tape for foosball, do you? Anyway, regardless.
What is foosball?
It's the table football.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What would you use grip tape for? Maybe it's like pro table football.
I mean, I have a feeling that this is going to be quite embarrassing for us when people explain stuff in the comments, but we'll go with it.
I mean, what it looks like to me is tennis racket grip.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe it's the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, or hockey. Although the hockey one would be quite long, I'd have thought. Anyway, I'm going to go hack because if you got out on a nice sunny ride when you weren't expecting it, you just want to get out in the sun, don't you? We know what it's like 100%. To be in a bleak winter for a long period of time. Not as bad as Canada.
Canada. I would happily ride a bike with no handlebar tape in order to make the most of the sun. Let me put it there.
Well, sun's better than none, so there you go.
Well, yeah, this is definitely better. So we're saying hack?
Hack from me as well, yes. Nice. You can get involved in this part of the show, of course. All you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second. But not only this week is it after the results from last week, Dan, but it's also after a little bit of news, which is, for anyone watching this in the UK, Camelback are now going direct to consumer, apparently, in the UK. So you can order your Camelback stuff directly from them. Yeah. But you can't get a GCN Camelback water bottle direct from them. For that, you'll have to come direct to us, who are direct to consumer.
Oh, yeah, we are, aren't we?
We are indeed, yeah. Very good stuff. Anyway, there's a nice bit of news for you.
Right, last week's photo was this one from Jabel Hafid at the UAE Tour. This is Lam Van Wilder picking his bike up off the floor. Our winner this week is at Chemistry636, who put, "Look what I found on Facebook Marketplace."
Tell you what, that'd be a good bike to find on Facebook Marketplace. But if it was just lying in the road, I'd ask questions about it.
If you didn't watch last week's show, it relates to that.
It does indeed. Right, the photo we're going to give you this week, though, Matthew Brennan holding a cuddly donkey.
Yep, the best prize in all of pro cycling, apart from the piglet, maybe at Trobro Leon.
True.
Animals are always good. Right, I will get you started. Hey, guys, check out my ass.
That's kind of funny.
Thanks, mate. I think we may have used that before at this time of year on the GCN show.
I mean, I think it might have happened at some point in the last 12 years, yes. But, I mean, Kerner Brussels Kerner only comes around once a year, Dan. So there's not many opportunities to make ass jokes.
No, exactly, yeah. Yeah, stay tuned in 12 months' time. There'll be more where that came from.
Is it a donkey or an ass? Do we know?
A donkey, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. Right, leave your best captions in the comment section down below and we'll pick a winner to receive their Camelback water bottle this time next week. Not too far to go now before we get that special nugget to end the show with.
Special nugget.
First up, though, we're going to let you know what's coming up on the channel and indeed go through some of our favourite comments. A few came on the last week's show at Joey Fest, but I can't believe only 16 people fell asleep to GCN. This is, of course, alluding to the people, 16 or so, that we think get to the end of the GCN show each and every week.
Yeah, Adam F7 said, I like how you assume the 16 people at the end actually watched the rest of the show and, and didn't just skip the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, that was an assumption on our part.
Cover chick said, I always make it to the end of the videos. But I do fast forward through some parts.
Thank you, cover chick. I mean, should we say then that if you want to be part of the 16, like, it's totally fine to fast forward the bits, right? I've got no problem with that. But I think to really be part of the 16, you kind of need to watch the whole lot.
To really be in the club.
You don't need to, like, necessarily be listening, but I think if you're asleep, that probably also doesn't count either.
No, not in the club.
I like this one, though. SR Com Hunter said, I believe I've watched every GCN show over the past 8 years or so, right to the end, and I still get disappointed every time one of you is substituted. So I wondered if we could make sure that our boss sees this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that cool? Yeah, cool. Right. Or when the show is shorter than 30 minutes. If it's over 45 minutes, you just know there are going to be some great stories. By the way, I genuinely thought that your first attempt on the Coi de Rates lead out was done as a joke. I could not imagine anyone being that awful as a lead out.
So, dear. Yeah. I didn't watch the edit of last week's show. I'm not sure if they put in the second attempt that we made that didn't make the final cut of that video. But anyway, at CX Cyclist, who was the person that we quoted a comment from that gave us our sort of leading story for last week's show.
Yeah.
Exactly. Says, thanks for the shout out, guys. I also wrote, it's nice to show off. If you have the money, go for it. Also nice to look at the bikes and gear, but don't complain about the price. $500 to $2,000 bikes are flipping amazing nowadays. Also, Qs and other gear under 105. Comfortable, fast, good-looking, modern. 90% as good as the top of the market. Even Conti-level race worthy. Before, bikes in that price range were old lemons compared to the sort of tech at that time. Hard to pedal, heavy, ugly, old tech. And a proper sporty modern tech bike costs €2,000 to €4,000. It's like complaining about the newest Lamborghini and Bugatti costing more than a house. Meanwhile, a 15K Kia and Hyundai have most of the same tech, actually usable, not just show-off toys, are more comfortable and just as fast. Not sure they are just as fast, but I see kind of your point.
Just as fast on a road with 20k an hour speed limit.
Well, there is that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really valuable point, actually. And I think for a lot of people, maybe it is just about resetting and then having more opportunities to see cooler, like more affordable bikes knocking around the place. There's definitely a little bit of resetting going on, I think, across cycling and particularly the bike industry, isn't it? We had a little bit of a chat about that earlier.
Well, we were, weren't we?
We were, yeah. Well, anyway, we'll save that for another day. Perhaps a nugget at the end of the show.
No, we want to keep people watching.
Yeah, exactly. Underneath that great video of Dan and Lorraine, Dan's wife, Matteo Duri said, I started Zwifting thanks to GCN Italy. 3 months ago, I was 103 kilos and now I'm 95 kilos. I feel better. I enjoy riding on the Zwift bike and I'm starting to get obsessed with the racing part of it. I've never been a cyclist and never will be, but I'm definitely becoming a fitter man.
You're a cyclist, Matteo.
Oh, 100%.
Joe Cooper, what an epic looking bike room. Yeah, a few people seem to like the bikes in the background.
Very cool.
Didn't have
mate,
my Super Record cassettes on display, but perhaps I should have done. Frank Eckler. The pride in Dan's face at the finish of the test. Priceless. Congrats on the lifestyle change and the fitness bump. Yeah, I was very proud because it wasn't just about the test result. I was proud that Lorraine just stuck to the sort of plan of training because they weren't... Well, Tuesday's session is more than manageable, but Thursdays, the VO2 max intervals, they're not easy.
No, they're not.
For anybody, are they?
No, VO2 max intervals are pretty punchy, aren't they? Then underneath the video where we put one pro cyclist against three GCN presenters, the three nerdiest GCN presenters, Zach AD said, I've been here to witness Ollie go from getting dropped constantly to dropping everyone and now back to getting dropped all the time.
Yes, actually, XXXDXDXXXD put something similar. Ollie's like the Ferrari F1 cycle. We're so back to it's so over.
Yeah. I like this comment from C5492 who said, I guess that factor bike is not fast enough to beat a dad on an old canyon. Mm. I mean, I'll tell you what, I don't mind just being called a random dad, but that is not an old canyon. That's my air road you're talking about. And that is fast as... Mm.
I put in a comment from that video which would compliment you. Have you removed it?
I did, yeah.
Oh, did you actually?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I felt a little bit like, oh.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the kind of guy Si is.
Yeah.
All right. Just one final one to that one then. So, Phil M. Kalir. But wait a minute. What's that blue stuff in the sky and that big shiny yellow thing in the air? You're not in Britain. And believe it or not, we were.
It was cold and the roads were still damp.
But it was sunny.
There was a bit of sun that day,
yes. I've got an itchy nose, apologies everyone.
That's all right, mate. Finally then, underneath the video about riding gravel, epic gravel, in fact, in Alula in Saudi Arabia, Jake GT1000 said what was on a lot of people's minds, I think, which is that the release of that video was some awkward timing given the outbreak of essentially war 24 hours previously in the Middle East.
The timing couldn't have matched more precisely, really, could it?
Not really. Now, we obviously thought about the timing of the video after it went up. We left it up because the Middle East is a very big place and Saudi Arabia is a huge country and it's not, to the best of our knowledge, currently involved in the conflict in any way. So hence why it didn't seem right, even though it is in the same region as the conflict currently.
Mm. To bring it down.
That's why it's still there.
Ladar88 put, love GCN, really do, but please address some of the comments in relation to is it safe for women? You have a huge responsibility to get this one right. Love you, bye. And as is insinuated in that comment, yes, we did have a lot of questions along those lines. We did try to reply to a few of them on the weekend as well, so you can watch them or read them over on the video. What Ollie and Alex observed when they were there was that women can just cycle the same as men. So just reading out what Ollie said here. No special requirements for clothing, no requirements for women to cover their heads or faces on or off the bike, although many still did.
Yeah, so that was something that we knew to be the case before we went out and made the video, and it was what the guys experienced when they were out there as well. So I think a lot of people's preconceptions about what is or isn't okay for women perhaps is different when you're there. Mm. And we spoke to a lot of people, be they either locals or indeed expats living out there, and I think everyone's experience is was that. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah. Right then, coming up on the channel this week, on Thursday, I've been doing some, investigative journalism, I think you'd call it, Si. Whilst I was at the UAE, I tested out riders' grip strength to see who's the strongest pro cyclist.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to give the answers away, but you can find that out in a video that comes out on Thursday.
Was it a scientific experiment, Dan?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Was it?
I could see how many kilograms they were pulling on their grip strength.
Did you get some big-name riders?
I got Isaac Del Toro, amongst others.
Whoa! How strong is Isaac Del Toro?
I'm not giving anything away, Si. Although not as strong as me. I'll give that away.
What? That's the spoiler alert.
Although one person who is stronger than me on the bike is Remco Evenepoel. You'll find out how I know that, apart from the very obvious reasons, on Saturday, because whilst I was there, I actually did a hot lap of the time trial circuit.
Hot?
Yeah.
You're talking lukewarm?
Well, it's 26 degrees, Si.
Oh, yeah, OK.
And you can find out how I got on compared to the pros, whether or not I would have finished inside the time limit, whether or not I would have finished last out of the riders taking part. That's coming out on Saturday.
Oh, my days, if some rider got beaten by you.
What do you mean? And then on Sunday, this will be the moment a lot of you have been waiting for, because we've been very busy editing the large amount of footage that Connor and Max got whilst doing the Atlas Mountains race. So you'll be able to watch that film, I think we'll call it, rather than video, which is out this coming Sunday.
Proper GCN epic, that one. Right, Dan, we have promised everyone a nugget.
It feels like this is about a 50-minute show as well.
I'm going to clear the deck.
On.
Well, there's one commenter that's happy at this point. We know that.
Just the one, yeah. Right, okay. Here we go. Here's the nugget. This is quite unbelievable, actually.
Yeah, this is proper blown us away. This little package showed up in the post.
Just a second. To those of you who fast-forwarded to this bit, shame on you.
Yeah, OK. This, I don't know if you can see that, is a very luxurious box from YouTube.
Oh, that was so synchronised with the first bit.
Well, we've been doing this for a long time, huh? OK. Hold up. Oh.
Got a hanger.
Coat hanger. Never seen one of them before, Dan.
Got a plaque, which I can't get out. There we go.
Good job we rehearsed this bit.
Yeah, Global Cycling Network. It's got our subscriber numbers, 3.5 million. Total all-time views. Can we reveal that or not?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, 1.4 billion. Unbelievable scenes. And other stats there. But we can't decide who's going to wear this, but we've got like a bomber/motorcycle jacket with GCN on the back. How cool is that? So this is basically YouTube celebrating their 20th year.
Yeah, so YouTube is 20 years old. GCN has not been there for the whole journey. But anyway, they've picked us out to say thank you for, not just creating content, building communities, setting the pace of the culture, continuing to shape the future of YouTube. So there we go. Some of this stuff, Dan, I don't think they've got quite right, because they've referred to you as an artist who turned moments into movements. So I thought maybe that must have been like a copy and paste mistake. But you look sick in that.
Cheers, mate.
Bro.
I mean, I feel $1 million.
It's almost like it doesn't fit you now that you've got Hench.
Oh, do you think? You'd better wear it.
I was going to say, yeah, that'll fit me nicely. Well, it's quite snug on you. Anyway, how cool is that? So thank you very much, YouTube, for including us in this. Right. And that is genuinely something that we feel very proud to have been a part of.
Yeah, that's very cool. We'll hang that up in the office somewhere.
Yeah, but of course, we couldn't have done it without you lots.
Exactly.
All 16 of you still here.
Yeah, I reckon we got 20 today.
Yeah.
We promoted it at the start.
When they talk about our community that we've built, this is a proper tight-knit group of 16.
Okay, all right. Well, prove you've been here by... marking me out of 10 for looks.
Right. Yeah. But no, anyway, thank you all very much for watching the GCN show to the bitter end. We will see you back here next week with another nugget.